Today's daf is daf Mem Aleph. We're holding by the Halakh Mishnah. Kol chazaka she'eni mata'ana, eina chazaka. So in the event that a person is in possession of something, but can't explain the legal basis for his possession, so then the fact that he was there does not prove anything. And the fact that the other person wasn't mecha does not prove anything. But this idea of not being mocha, remember, is not based on a mechila. It's based on the fact that the person recognizes that there is obviously another owner. But we don't use it to claim that since he didn't say anything, so that means that he doesn't care if you walk off with his property. Therefore, if there's no ta'ana, ta'ana chazakar or ketza. Amar lo mata o sevetok shili. Vu amar lo, nobody ever said anything. Lo amar li adam davar meolam. So if somebody says, why are you in my property? And he says, well, nobody ever said anything about it, so I figured it's okay. So then he can be thrown off in a chazak. But if he said shemachartali, or he said shenatatali b'matana, or he said your father machra vicha machrali, or your father gave it to me as a gift of vicha natali b'matana, whatever the ta'ana is, and he's claiming to be an owner, then harezu chazaka. However, haba mishum yirusha eno tzarich ta'ana. Somebody who is taking the place of someone else, so he's an heir, in that case, he does not need to know how it is that this belonged to his father. He has a right to assume that his father was in possession of it legally. Now we're going to see what establishes the fact that he's an heir then on this particular property. And we're also going to see whether that means that in a general statement, anyone coming machmas somebody else's possession, which would mean not only if he's an heir, but also if he's a buyer. It would be the same thing. In other words, I'm not expected to know how it is that the person that got it to me, what his original rights were. That's not so clear. So the Gemara will investigate this.
Wasn't
Taino there? Gemara will ask about that too. But Pashtas Enotzarech Tana means he doesn't have to explain how it is that the person that he got it from came into it. So I'm not coming to say that I know that I own it. I'm coming to say I have a right to assume that I own it, which is somewhere in the middle of the Chazaka She'eni Matana, where you say, well, you had no reason to assume anything. You're admitting yourself that it's not yours. And the Chazaka She'eni Matana, where you can define what it is that gives you the legal rights. Then we have the middle case, which is essentially Ta'anin Analei, as the Gemara calls it. The court actually will demand proof that this person's assumptions were wrong, rather than needing proof that his assumptions were right. So that's the case of the Yoresh. What the case of the Lokeach is remains to be seen in this Gemara. So first thing Gemara asks Pshita. I mean, isn't it obvious that if a guy says, I never bought the field, that he could be thrown off by the owner? No. Well, no, because the point over here is that Ma'adetema Haigav Mizban Zav Noli. I might have thought that Lamaisa, this person did buy it, and he did have a shtar. People get very, very disturbed in court, because they're always thinking, if I say this, what are they going to say to me? So he says to himself, gosh, you know, they're asking me how do I own it. So if I'm going to tell him, shtar, he actually had a shtar, shtar haverly. He was a normal owner, he had a shtar, but he lost the shtar. So now, what an idiot I am, I lost the shtar. So he figures, why is he saying, well, nobody ever said anything? Because he's afraid to say he had a shtar. If I'll say that the guy sold it to me, so then he'll say, where's your shtar? And then I'm going to be exposed as a phony. I mean, so then they're going to say, well, you're still a liar. How could you not have a shtar? Nobody's that dumb. So Mamela, he figures, you know what, at least like this, maybe they'll say he was meichel to me or something. I mean, but I can't walk in there and say something which Lamaisa is going to end up showing me to be lying.
He doesn't have the figures, he doesn't have
a chazaka? He does, but he doesn't know the din. He figures, why don't I have a shtar? If that were the case, you might have thought that we, as the court, should say to him, did you have a shtar? Did you maybe buy it and lose your shtar? And why would the court do such a thing? Because remember, we have a principle, which is, cases like this should be included under the general rubric of ptach picha lilenu. This is what Shlomo HaMelech says. It's up to you in pursuing justice. When you think that somebody doesn't know to say what he could say, ask him. Be ma'orer him. You should be the ones that perhaps should say, maybe you had a shtar. Kamashman, we will not say it to him. So that this is, and that is a Kiddush. In other words, it's not considered to be innate in the fact of Chazaka that there must be a Taina. Of course, the question is that we should assume there must be a Taina attached to it. The question is that the Mishnah only seems to be saying that it would not be a contradiction, that it would not be a Chiev to say Ptach Bichalile. But it's taking for granted it would not be a contradiction. Because then, even if the guy wasn't an Eiling, let's say the guy got up and said, the truth is, I didn't want to say it, but I had a shtar and I'm an idiot. So now, wait a minute. A minute ago you said, you just wandered in there and nobody ever said anything, and now you're saying you had a shtar. You can't change your taina because that's called chayzer v'tayin. And it's eino chayzer v'tayin. So that the Gemara doesn't see as a problem. The only question is whether we will say it for him, not whether he could say it, which becomes the diuk of many of the Rishonim, who point out that this means that if somebody would, in fact, before leaving the Bezdin, obviously, we said before he can ever be, go and come back with a Taina, because then we say any kind of revision of Tainas means you've been talking to your lawyers, not that you figured out something spontaneously and you burst out with what your real Taina was, but that had you said it yourself in court when you saw that they're not paying any attention, well, you know, what do you think? The guy's just going to let you walk off with his property. And then you say, no, if I really had a shtar, that's acceptable if you will say it yourself.
So we don't, it's not called Chazir V'tayin.
It's not called Chazir V'tayin, you see over here, right? All right. Yeah, Kamashman, that we don't say that. I mean, look, I just want to point out on the side, here, without confusing issues, that the Gemara's question of Pshita is not really all that reasonable, because we did entertain issues earlier of Mechila, you know, and address them. So to say that it's not necessarily obvious seems to be Nogea the Sugya that we had earlier, but let's let that ride for a while and see cases where we would assume that there was some elements in
Mechila. What's the case
in
Mechila?
Why can't he say over here that since nobody said anything, he must have been Mechila to me? And we're going to today actually touch on cases of Mechila. So that is something that is l'chora problematic with saying Pshita to a Taina that a guy could have been Mechila. So I need to keep it in mind now, because we're going to be hitting some cases which sound like Mechila. And in fact, Rav Anan, what actually happened, and this is why really the Gemara, this is a complex case because it involves a number of these issues, including the Mechila question. Even though it's a Taina, the Shiloh, what would be a Taina, it really raises our consciousness of the Mechila problem. Because what happened to Rav Anan is that a tsunami hit his field. So Shakal Mitka Ba'ari, and washed everything away, right? So now, yeah, this raging river, okay, so it overturned every marker that he'd had in the field, including the wall between himself and his neighbor's field. So when he came to rebuild the field, the wall, so Ozal, he goes ahead himself, and Ahadar Guda, he goes and he puts up the wall, but he puts it up in the wrong place. And it turns out that he moved it into the other guy's area, not by taking any of the other person's area, but by not giving of his field. So in other words, the wall is now mamish on the boundary, so that the whole thing is in the other person's rishus, instead of it being half on his and half on his. So this guy sues him. The other kami Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, look, you know, I'm sure you didn't realize it, but you're going to have to go and give it back to him. Zil hadar. So Rav Anan said, but I have a chazaka. Now, obviously, he did not have a chazaka for 3 years, right? I have a chazaka. So immediately, of course, Rav Nachman understood what he meant was that since I did this right in the guy's nose, so then it's a chazaka alibi de Rabbi Yehuda. Because remember, Rabbi Yehuda says that the whole point of the chazaka is not that we need 3 years to establish that a person, you wouldn't have shut up for 3 years. It's that the person wouldn't have shut up even for a minute, except that we need the 3 years because we take a shear that includes even getting to Spain and back. Right? Okay. But according to him, that means if Lamaisa, the guy is right there, then Rabbi Yehuda would be Maida, so you see from this Gemara, that the Chazaka would be instantaneous.
When did he sue? How much time did it take?
But, a week, whatever it was. And it certainly wasn't Shnos Chazaka, that's clear from the Gemara. It was an immediate Maisa. Or you all like Rabbi Yishmael, the Maisa, we're going to see Rabbi Yishmael clearly later on, but we've already seen Rabbi Yishmael is understand the nature of Chazaka based on stimulus response. Right? It wasn't the 3 years was the question, according to Rabbi Yishmael, not of time. According to Rabbi Yishmael, it was a question of events that should have triggered a response but didn't. So something like this that's right in front of him, Rabbi Yishmael would hold also. That's, I guess, what you're timing, said Rav Nachman to Rav Anan. You're not an idiot. Coming here a week later claiming you have a chazak. I mean, so in other words, you're trying to tell me that we paskin, you're paskin like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yishmael. that hold the amrit kobefanav alter habechazaka. That if you do something right in the face of the owner, then that's a chazaka on the spot. And we spoke about the question of the owner helping the guy carry the things into his rishus. We said that they're la alter habechazaka because there he's saying that you're a bialik.
Certainly, if he doesn't build the wall.
Oh, that we're going to see. Omale. So let Yilkatakavati, but we don't pass him like either of those sheetahs. You need 3 years for a chazaka. So what kind of chazaka do you have? Omale, no. I'm coming to Taina and Mechila. He actually clearly was Meichel because he helped me build the wall. So Va'achil, the Atavisiyah Beguda Ba'adai, he helped me build that wall. So how can he come in Taina now to sue me that I should move the wall? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Omale, sort of not what's said to him. Of course, it makes perfectly good sense. You yourself would never have built the wall in his rishus. So what you're telling me is that every mark was obliterated and you made a mistake. So why can't he make the same mistake? I mean, if somebody is meichel, he may be meichel based on what his knowledge is. That's not called bechila. He thought that it was your field. So what kind of meichel?
Was he meichel if he wasn't both his territory?
Well, you're claiming that since he allowed me to build the wall, and clearly since it was a joint best effort in which we assumed that it's kedai to build the wall here. So he must have taken into consideration in building the wall with me the chance that it's on the wrong spot and he didn't care. I mean, that's what I think happened, says Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman, it's not true. There's no such thing as Bechila based on a best effort. There's a Bechila based on a mistake. But then, of course, if it turns out that we find out it was a mistake, then the Bechila was a mistake. Why should we assume that it was a Bechila based on the Sofet? So it's a Bechila b'ta'uti. Because the truth is, you didn't build it as a suffix. You built it because you had made an honest error in thinking that this is where it belonged. So then, you too, let me ask you something. If you had known that this wasn't your field, or that you couldn't establish that this is your field, you would have built the wall there. Of course not. Law of Adata. There's no way you would have built the wall. So you would have called a surveyor, and then you would have built the wall. So that means whatever mistake you made is the mistake he made. So ki hecha da'at lo havi adata, unami lo havi yada. It's not a question of mechila based on best efforts. So if he didn't know, it's no different than you didn't know. And therefore, it's all honest mistakes, but lamaisa, you don't gain the right to any kind of land based on this. Okay, but had it not been a mistake, so enochinami, we would have said mechila. But that's because we have a direct siyua. So we have three levels over here. We have word gets out that I'm using your field. You have that I'm doing it in your face, which seems to be a far stronger assertion of balud. And therefore, libra Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel would constitute a chazaka, but only a chazaka, not mechila. And then we have an actual siyua b'hadeh, which constitutes mechila manish. That's easy, because otherwise Rav Anan wouldn't have to come back with a new tain and say, but he helped me, and therefore it's Bechila. Forget about whether you hold it's a chazaka or not. That's what seems clear in this discussion between Rav Nachman and Rav Anan. Now, the same thing happened to Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana had a field, and Shaka Bit Kabari, and his field was also completely washed out. So Azal Hada Guda Ba'ara Delavdi Day, and he also made the same mistake, building the wall on land that wasn't his. And over here, it was mamish. It was in the other guy's rishus. So he moved it over into the other guy's field. So this guy sues him. They come to Rav Yehuda's bezdin, and he brings two witnesses. Now what happened was the two witnesses in cross-examination contradicted each other. Because Chad Amar, I think, Chad Amar tarti utziata a'al, v'chad Amar tlat utziata a'al. So Rav Yehuda asked them, okay, how far into the other person's boundary, if you guys are testifying that you know where the boundary was, how far over the edge did he put this wall? So one witness says it was two furrows into the other field, and one said three. So now, so that's the shaila. Do we have edut mukheshet, or do we say betoch tlas, a straight? So Rav Yehuda accepted the edus at the minimum, of course, the common denominator. The common denominator was two furrows. So he told Rav Kahana, Amarle, Zil Shlim Tarte Migotlat. Look, you're going to have to basically pay him, if he's willing, or move, two out of the three furrows, because that's the commonality of the edim. Omarle, Rav Kahana, it's always dangerous passing against Tamir Chachomi. So Rav Kahana says to Rav Yehuda, I see an interesting sheet that you got there, Rabbi. I mean, in other words, you're going like a Shimon ben Elazar, because there's a famous machlokas by Shammai Beit Hillel about whether it's considered to be a contradiction at Pasos the Edim if one says 100 and one says 200 about the same event, or one says 2 or one says 3 about what was clearly the same event, like in this case.
Two sets of
Edim. Oh, we're going to see. So Amalei Kaman, Reb Shimon ben Elazar. So that's your pasuk like Reb Shimon ben Elazar. That's what you're doing. Because remember, I mean, before we even begin discussing this, that since David raised it, let us recognize that there's a big nafkamina between two sets of Aiden, in which one set says two and one set says three, or two Aiden, in which one says one and one says two and one says three. Because if you have two sets of Aiden, so you're going to say, well, we have Eidut Mukhashat. I mean, let's say they're both reporting the same event differently. We can't accept the testimony. But then we could say to ourselves, well, wait a minute, but that doesn't mean that both are lying. So in other words, what we're going to assume is we can't accept either because somebody's lying. But if there's a common denominator, so then we definitely have two Aidim for the two. We just don't know which two Aidim. So we should be able to accept those two Aidim. But let's say it would be two Aidim, each one of which, like this case, gives a different story. So what are you going to say over there? That you don't have a kat of Aiden. They're contradicting each other. You don't have two Aiden. You can't say, well, I'll put together a kat out of the common denominator. You don't have a kat. If somebody's lying, where's the kit of Aiden? That's what you would think. Now, you are saying that even when you have two individuals, you could put them together into a single Aedus by taking a common denominator despite the fact that they're contradicting themselves. Oh, man. I mean, there's only one sheet I know that holds that. That's Reb Shimon ben Elazar's interpretation of the Machlokes b'Shamay Beit Hillel. The Tanya Amar Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Lo nechleku Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel al shtei kitei Aidim. There was no machlokas. You guys have it all wrong. The Mishnah reported the machlokas on two separate groups of Aidim. That was a machlokas, whether it's considered to be mukeshet. No, says Reb Shimon Elazar. Wrong. In a case like that, where you have shtei kitei Aidim, where let's say achat omeret manu, v'achat omeret matai. In that case, we say, look at the common denominator. If they're both referring to the same case, they say, Reuven lent Shimon $100 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at such and such a place at such and such a date. And they both report exactly that event, except that one says $100, one says $200. So they're clearly talking about the same thing. So over there, says Reb Shimon Elazar, everybody's agreed that yesh b'chlal matayim mana. You can look at the common denominator, not because of the commonality, but because you definitely have a kat of Edom that is saying 100. You know that to be true. Alma nechlekum. Where is there a machlokas? Only where it's one set, meaning there's two individuals, where one of the two says echad omer mana ve'echad omer matayim. So over there, it's true that Beit Shammai says nechleka edutan, but claims Reb Shimon ben Elazar Beit Hillel that halakha kamoto. Beit Hillel says that even there we would say yesh b'chlal matayim mana, and we only take the contradiction to apply to the aspect which is contradicted. So in other words, if we're talking about, do we have two witnesses that say that Reuven borrowed $100? Yes. Do we have two witnesses that he borrowed $200? No. We have Edus Mukreshes about $200. Okay. So don't trust the 200. But that means we can split it to look at the element that's a contradiction and the element that's not a contradiction. And that's who you're going like, huh? That's very interesting. I happen to know that there's a written psak by Rabbi Yashiv that says that we don't pasuk like that. That's what everybody says. Let me see it. So when you bring it in front of me, we'll discuss it. I'm not interested in the rumors about the psukim from Eretz Yisrael. Everybody's got these magical psukim from Eretz Yisrael that backs up their contention. So when you bring it into court, we'll discuss it. Meanwhile, you're going to pay. Fascinatingly contemporary issues here.
No,
there's no argument about that. The question is...
How much?
Yeah.
So does that lend credence, I'm saying, for the psak? To say, look, you know, we don't know, and yet we have a problem with the Aedis because it could be there a machish le'zuhasum, but...
But we should assume that you should pay the 20 amas of land. I mean, what? Ahu gavra, the darba kashta b'liyata arba shani. Now, to indicate the extent of the idea we mentioned in the Mishnah, that there are cases where we will be ta'aninan le, namely... where a person is a yoresh. He's not expected to know how his father got this field that his father bequeathed him. So that we said over there, we will make the other guy show that it wasn't sold to the father. We will be toning for him that the fact that you were yoresh is the equivalent of saying, I have a right to be here. So it's not that we need you to have a taina that in itself would be able to establish the fact that you have a right to be here, which is tremendous chiddush. It's not the fact that the chazaka backs a legal taina. All that we need is a reason for your assumption that there may be such a time. And that would be sufficient. So if you're saying, well, I don't know. How am I supposed to know how my father got this field? But Lamaisa, I inherited it from him. We're not going to turn around and say to him, well, if you don't know, then you're just saying that you made assumptions and this guy's got a shtar, so you have no right to your assumption. In that case, we will say, must be your father had a shtar and it was Yerkes. And there's no way you should be expected to know that. So we will put in the taina for you. Now the question is that true about a buyer as well? We've already seen, of course, a lot of examples of the Gemara that we're about to have, but this is, I mean, we've seen a lot of examples of Chasak Sheni Mataina too, but this is the first time now that we're coming to discuss specifically the Mishnah that's defining the nature of taina. So there was a guy in the town of Kashta who was living in the attic for 4 years of a house. The owner of the house comes in one day and says, I thought it was ghosts. What are you doing up there? Yeah. So, my baita, what are you doing in this house? Omarle, mi planya zavinta de zavda minach. I bought it from so-and-so, who bought it from you. And the guy, Susan, they come to the Bezdin of Rebchia. Oto le kami de Rebchia. So, Rebchia said to him, look, you're assuming that that guy bought it from the owner. If you could present witnesses, ni itlecha sahadi, the darba iu, the zavanta minach, that the person from whom you purchased it lived in it, I don't care for how long, if you had yuma. Then, even if it's one day, then I will say that you are the equivalent of a yorei, because you're not expected to know why somebody is living in a house. But you have a right to assume if somebody's living in a house, if it's his house. So we'll be tayin. Again, obviously only because there's a chazak and something is very out of sorts here, that nobody said anything for the past 4 years. But then we'll be tayin. But if you don't even have now anything on which the court can base a taina, we can't be tayin for you. So there needs to be an objective taina, an objective reason for us to be taina. That I'm saying. I can't be taina for you because you say it. But Ilolo, now Rav, who was the nephew of Rebchia, remember, or a super nephew of Rebchia, because his father and mother were both brothers and sisters of Rebchia. Remember, it was that whole story of the marriage, of the second marriage, of the two children of the second marriage. So I was sitting there, that's why he calls him Chavivi, this is like super uncle, right? The most avuncular relationship imaginable is Rav and Rebchia. So he says, Aviativ da kabeda chavini. I was sitting there in front of my dear uncle. I'm relaying. I said to him, I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, if you're ready to be tayin, so why does he have to prove that the person lived there? I mean, you're telling me that ein adam asur likach limkor balayla. I mean, suppose ein achinami, this guy had bought the house in the middle of the night. And in the morning, he found a buyer. Is there something wrong with that? I mean, isn't that a perfectly reasonable kind of thing that somebody buys a piece of property in order to do business with? He was planning on, exactly, the modern equivalent of a day trader. He thought maybe he would improve the property. Anyway, somebody comes along and says, I'd like to buy. Sure. Quick sale. Get myself a quick profit. I'd rather have it now. The chaziti ledate, now, even though he didn't say it, I could see that Lamaisa, I don't want to give any ideas over here, but Iomale, that had in fact the buyer in this case, the putative buyer, said that I know that he bought it that night, that of course would have been perfectly okay. So had he said, Kamoy didizav lemina, he would have been Mehema. That would have been a perfectly good taina. Migu di boy Omale ana zavanta minach, because he could have just as easily said, I bought it directly from you. What's that? Initially, he could have said that. The truth is, many of the Achronim point out that this whole piece doesn't make any sense. What do you mean, migu? We don't need a migu. No taina requires a migu. All we need is a taina. That's all. And this is a perfectly reasonable taina. I bought it from a guy that I know bought it from you. All that the Gemara really means here is that it's exactly the same as saying, I bought it from you. What's the difference if I say, do you agree? That's what the migu means. Do you agree that if the guy had said, I bought it from you, that's okay? Does he have any raya? He brought it from you. It's the chazaka that's the raya to the taina that he bought it from you. So why isn't the chazaka a riot to the taina that he bought it from a guy that he knows is the owner that he saw buy it from you? It's exactly the same chazaka. That's what the migu means over here. It's not really the nemunis of a migu, which is unnecessary. Oh, right. So it's not, in other words, I understood from what Rebchia responded to me, that it's not because we believe it's unreasonable for a person to say, he bought it 3 hours before, I saw him buy it, I went, that's fine. That's not my problem. My problem is that I need a straw to hold on to be ta'aninan for somebody else as a bezdin. I can't utilize a chazaka that doesn't have any taina unless I can turn it into a taina. In order to turn it into a taina, I need more than the guy's word. I need something objective that allows me to act on my own. We saw the same issue by Dror de Mamena, the way Tosfos understood Dror de Mamena. If the court is called upon to ask to act objectively, that's totally different than when a court is called to act upon somebody's taina. So this is the same type of svara. So what Reb Chiya was saying is, show me an objective fact. The witnesses said this guy lived there. Okay, so now I have to think to myself as the court, what does it mean that he lived there? But for you to say, well, I mean, I just assumed. If you just assumed, we can't assume along with you. Because that would be basing our meta assumptions on your original assumptions. We're getting nowhere. So bring me something. Give me a straw. Bring me two witnesses that say that he was there that day. That's the point. So then, enochinami. I would have believed him. And that I understood, said Rav, from our conversation. Omar Rav HaKavati Reb Chiya Mistavra, it's reasonable what Reb Chiya is saying, because if you look in our Mishnah, is not the case of the Lokeach essentially the case of the Yoresh? Now, note that in the Mishnah, it says, Haba Mishum Yerusha, Eino Tzarech Ta'ana. Now, here's where the Gemara discusses Yoresh. If somebody is coming as an heir, he does not require a Ta'ana. Now, when you say does not require a Ta'ana, you seem to be saying specifically, he does not require a Ta'ana, because we will create the Ta'ana for him. But if it meant to say he doesn't require anything, and all he needs to do is to say, I'm here, I have no idea why, I just know that I inherited it. That wouldn't be enough. Because otherwise you should have said, Eino Tzarech Klum, and we'll do everything for him. If you say, Eino Tzarech Ta'ana, it means he doesn't need a Ta'ana. But Haraya boy, he has to establish that there's a reason for us to assume that he's an heir because his father was there. So in the same way that you need that reason for Yoresh, you should need that amount of objective evidence for a Ta'ana Velokeah. So Lachora Reb Chiya actually is based on our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Satanu do boy or raya boy, says the Gemara, not necessarily. First of all, I can tell you that in a Mishnah, where the entire focus of the Mishnah is on the nature of ta'ana, I don't change the language to talk about inotzorech klum. I say, does not need a ta'ana. But does not need a ta'ana means doesn't need anything. It means that the chazaka is a valid chazaka because you didn't say anything. Maybe it means that. Well, you say you need necessarily to have an objective raya. It's still a tremendous chiddush of Reb Chiya. I could say that to you. But you know what? Even if I'll grant you your opinion. You hold that the Mishnah means specifically, doesn't need a taina, but does need a raya. That's still not a raya to Reb Chiya. Why? Because ibayit ema, I could say that there's a tremendous nafkamina between a buyer and an heir. A buyer, the court indeed will be taina for him. Why is that? We have a chazaka. People don't just shoot their money around for no reason. There must have been elements of due diligence. Nobody pays money for something without some sense that he had a reason to believe that this guy was there. That umdana itself may be sufficiently objective for the court to be tayin like. Masha Einkein, an error, he didn't shoot the person who bequeathed it to him, so he didn't do anything at all. I mean, but therefore, for us to go ahead and be tayin for him, for what? There was no basis for us to be tayin at all. Not his behavior, and not objective fact. So Mamela, you can't prove the din of a lokeach from a yoresh. Therefore, I mean, I'm not saying Reb Chiya is wrong. Lamaisa, as we've seen throughout the entire sugya, we've made many, many cases where we assumed that Reb Chiya was right. That was all of the cases that we spoke about. All of the Rishonim kept saying, because you can't bring a raya, the guy was there for a day. In other words, everybody assumes indeed that the halacha is like Reb Chiya. It's just that the Mishnah doesn't necessarily imply Reb Chiya's din. That my father was there for a day. So there's witnesses that say that we had a reason to assume that you are a Yoresh. Otherwise, why should we even say you're a Yoresh? Now, the question is like this. Iboyelohu, near Abo, my. How far, when you say, bring witnesses that this guy lived there for a day. Suppose I have witnesses that the guy was there with a surveyor. He's looking over the property.
The guy
that I bought from. That's the only witnesses I can bring you. Is that enough for Reb Chiya? I say, the guy was there, he had the engineers there, and he had the surveyors there, and I went over to him and I said, look, before you invest any further, let me take it off your hands. How much you want? Would that be enough for there to be a taina? Says the Bible, it's the same thing. Of course. I mean, objectively, the man was there. I mean, what does he have to move his refrigerator in? Rav Amar, no, not at all. Because this guy may have found a sucker. He was considering buying the field. He's looking for a quick sale, but man, he never thought it'd be that quick. He didn't even buy it yet. And somebody comes over and says, don't invest. Okay. How much you want? I don't know. What do you want to give? Whatever it is fine. and he's up and off. So you're not bringing much of an objective raya by saying that you saw a guy being Messiah. Ovid, Inish, the Seer, Harev, Elos, Ovid. Lots of people will bring an engineer and then decide not to buy a place. That doesn't mean that he bought it already. So Mamela, that doesn't give us even our proverbial straw to work with. So we wouldn't be able to be taken on that basis. All right, so now the question. We're talking about a classic Chazaka case. It's 3 years. I didn't keep my shtar. That's what Chazaka is all about. What good is the shtar? I understand. The guy wrote you a shtar. Maybe you have a shtar for the Brooklyn Bridge. What do you mean you have a shtar? Some guy sees you're an idiot and writes you a shtar for a field that he doesn't own. What right did you have to take a shtar from him? You meet him in the street. You say, do you own any properties? He says, yeah, I got property all over. You want to buy one? Yeah, fine. Which one would you like? Yeah, pick a card. Any card. What kind of one? How does that establish anything? Okay, exactly. That's why we're saying you need to have some evidence of the person's ownership, at least that he lived there for a day. Otherwise, Zainachinani. But we're going to see how you know in a minute. Now, what this implies is that we started talking about the chazaka that is 3 years after somebody else bought a field. We said that that's a valid time. Is it a valid chazaka in a case where there wasn't one person that kept it for 3 years? So in other words, we say, okay, we can transfer ownership, and then we talked about a case where the last guy used it for 3 years. But how about if we include the time of the first person? Now, that's something that is raised automatically in your mind. You say, I've been here for 3 years, and I bought it from so-and-so who bought it from you. How long ago did so-and-so buy it from you? So let's say so-and-so supposedly bought it from you 2 years ago, and you saw the contract, and now you've been here a year. So can you turn around and say, look, I've been a year, he was there 2 years, I saw the contract, you didn't say anything for the past 3 years, and therefore I say that original contract, which now he lost, is the reason that I'm here. So what's your problem? He doesn't have to keep his contract for 3 years. Is that a chazaka, or is a chazaka specifically the fact that I was here the whole time?
I lost my contract, too.
My contract is irrelevant. I'm talking about, my contract is irrelevant. I bought it from him. His contract is the one that's relevant because you're the one that he bought it from. So fine. You don't want to talk to me. You're saying, I don't know who you are. You bought it from this guy. This guy never bought it from me. Fine. Then let's discuss that. This guy never bought it from you. For 3 years, you've been quiet. Why were you quiet? So if the guy turns around and says, why was I quiet? Because none of you jokers were here for 3 years. So if I see a guy coming in now as a hit-and-run artist, he comes into my property, takes my stuff for a year. By the time I'm ready to bring suit, I find some other joker in here. So I figured he ran off, and now some new guy came. Now I got to prepare a suit with a new name. By the time I'm ready for that suit, then there's a third joker. So I forgot, what am I supposed to do? I mean, if I see that none of you have the guts to stay here, so then clearly you're all phonies. I didn't think I had to worry about it. Anybody who looked at this sees that you're phonies. So then the guy says, what do you mean sees that we're phonies? We all had contracts. Everything was legal. Everything was up and above ground. So why exactly did you think that we were all phonies? You should have been even more outraged that people are buying and selling your properties. I don't get it. So that's the question. And of course, the question would be, does that mean that there have to be contracts? Could it be considered to be up and above board if there were witnesses? Or it's the only thing that would allow him to say you're all phonies if we tried to do things in private? What would be the level if there is a tziruv? So, says the Gemara, shlosha lekuchot are mitztarfim, and amara, but that's dafka if they worked with a shtar. So in other words, if everybody had a shtar that they bought it from the other guy, then this person can't turn around and say, I didn't think that any of you were serious. What do you mean? I put my name in a public document. What do you mean? You didn't think that? You knew that we were buying and selling, not that one came in and one went out. Now, remember that there are different levels of proofs that involve due diligence. So what we know is that whenever something is written down in a shtar, then by definition, we are assuming that the shtar is the equivalent of a title guarantee, right? Because since everybody knows about it, Therefore, it provides protection for a buyer. Because if a buyer, let's say a buyer buys a piece of property, he can know what is involved in possible liens against this property by researching whether this guy sold a field the week before with achrayas for this property. If he sold the property a week before or a year before, whatever it was, right? I can always find out because there's shtarot. So it's the equivalent of being able to walk into a title insurance company and saying you have information about this particular field. They'll tell you right away, well, if you buy that field, you should know that there are the following potential liens on the field. There's another field that he sold that had liens against it from a loan that he had taken. Those liens are going to be transferred essentially out to this field because if they collect the previous field, then the buyer of the previous field is going to come and say, you owe me the money I paid for the field, and the only way he's going to collect it is from your field, which was sold after his field was sold. So you want to take that chance, you got to find out, does this guy have cash? Is he going to be able to... That's all up to you, basically. You provide your own risk assessment, but that's only if it's written in a contract. If it's not in a contract, then we know that if it's entirely bal peh, and we have to establish what about witnesses. We'll talk about that in a moment. But if it's bal peh, then you cannot be assumed to know that there exists a problem with a lien. So because of that, we made a takana. No liens that are not recorded liens. Because otherwise, we're going to destroy the market. As a buyer is supposed to be able to protect himself if he's going to be suddenly slapped with a lien that wasn't recorded anywhere that he could have found out about it. Now, this works also in terms of a loan. The same thing. A loan creates a lien. But what kind of loan creates a lien? A loan with a contract. Because otherwise, we have the same problem. If a guy borrowed money, and now he's going to bring witnesses, we'll see if the witnesses are enough. But l'chor, if there's no shtar, he'll bring witnesses that there was an oral loan. So I'm going to say, well, thank you very much. So I'm not going to buy property anymore. Who knows what's going to happen? One day somebody's going to come along, bring two witnesses, say that this guy borrowed money which was worth as much as my field, and the loan took place before my field. It was a loan on my field, and now I'm going to be left without my field and without my money. Go chase the seller. So therefore, unless it's recorded, whether it's a record of a sale or a record of a loan, we know that there's no liens. The question is, what constitutes recorded? So when Rav comes along over here and says, kulam bishtar, so in other words, what Rav is saying is that the only way that it's possible to do due diligence and protect yourself from pre-existing liens against your purchase is if there's a shtar. But nothing else will create sufficient noise that allow you to go ahead and to establish whether there was an existing lien. So Lameimra, are you trying to tell me that that means that Rav holds that only an actual contract creates a kol, but the fact that witnesses know about something does not create a kol? Let le kala. The problem is that Rav himself says the opposite. He said, "Hamocher sadeh be'edim goveh min nechasim mishu'badim." If somebody buys a field from someone who had sold a field with witnesses, but without a shtar, then if something happens to the field he sold first, that person can turn around and collect from a field that was sold to another person later. Now, how's the later person supposed to protect himself if there was no shtar and there are only witnesses? Obviously, Rav holds, you can protect yourself if something was done with witnesses. So then now Rav is contradicting himself. Here he says, it's dafka with a shtar. You could be mavzikum lakuchetz. And over there he says, even with Aden. How do you explain that? Rav says, but come on. There's a tremendous difference between the cases. If somebody is buying something, he's expected to do due diligence. All that Rav is saying over there is that witnesses allow due diligence. Remember, we had the same issue, Legabi Mecha versus Chazaka. We took exactly this sfara. This was Tosfos' sfara as to why we always talk about the Mecha as opposed to the Chazaka. Because a Chazaka, we know that the owner of a field is going to do due diligence about what the status of his field is. He will know about the Chazaka. But the person who has the Chazaka is not going to have detectives listening for a Mecha anywhere. So he needs to have a call that's going to come to his ears. That's how we remember Chalek with three people, two people. Why it is we always talk about Mechor Shalom B'Fanav instead of Chazaka Shalom B'Fanav. This is a given that's different. It's exactly the same idea over here. You want to buy something, what are you going to throw your money out? You're going to first hire a detective or go into a company that deals with these things that keep a list of all of the sales that they've heard about, and it's their business to hear about it. So I pay them, whatever. I do my own research. But I could certainly hear about things that came across with Aden. But to tell me that where I'm not looking to hear about these things, such as over here, a guy is somewhere, hears rumors that Joe is in his field. Says, oh boy, if that guy stays there, he's in big trouble. So then the next year he hears, nah, Joe left. Now George is in the field. Oh, if he stays there, he's in big trouble. The next year it's some other guy. So he figures, okay, so no, at least nobody, I don't have the time to be sitting here in court, I'm in Spain, but Lamaitha, at least nobody's trying to be mocking my property. So then he comes home and he fears, well, what do you mean? There were witnesses, they were buying and selling, I don't hear about the witnesses. It's not my duty to do due diligence when I own a field with a contract. What do you mean, do due diligence? This is my field, I got a safe deposit box with my original shtar. I'm completely diligent. You guys are going to have to prove that you took it from me, right? That's perfectly acceptable. So you can't just throw it all into one pot and say that a buyer is the same thing as the guy who's an original owner is supposed to be mocher. Totally different situations. So there, if a buyer doesn't do due diligence, we have a rule. Inu avsido anafshayo. If you want to be a shmo, pay for it. Don't come to us and start crying, I didn't know, when you could have known. All you needed to do was walk into a title insurance company. That's all. If you don't care enough about protecting yourself, so fine, throw your money out. Wait a minute, but even that doesn't work. Umi omer Rav Achi, what you just said, that Rav says, that if you don't have a shtar, you could be nonetheless be govim and a chasim and shubadim if you do have witnesses, because the buyer of the next property is sufficiently well protected to be able to perform due diligence with Aiden. That's what you're saying. That doesn't make any sense. It runs against a Beferisha Mishnah. I see we're running out of time, so we'll do the Beferisha Mishnah tomorrow, I guess. Okay. A lot of fun.
2 days are open.
Kol chazaka she'en ima ta'ana ina chazaka. Ketzad. Omar lo ma ata ose betok sheli. Vo omer lo, lo omar li adam davar meolam, ina chazaka. Shemacharta li, shenatata li b'matana, or avicha machra li, avicha nadan li b'matana, arezo chazaka. V'abba bishum yirusha, eno tzarich ta'ana. I understand, obviously, no. Ma de tema hai gavra mizben zavdan li hayara, and actually had a shtar once, v'irchas. He was just scared. I know what they're going to do. They're going to say, oh, yeah, huh? It's, we should do it. Yes, yes, wink, wink. And Kigon says, that it's insufficient. Rav Anan, Shokobitka Ba'ari, Ozal, Hadaguda Ba'ari, the Chavri, after the Kamidir of Nachman, Omale, Zil Hadar. So he said, what do you mean? But Zikili. I'm like, what kind of chazaka? Come on, Rabbi Yudav, Rabbi Shmuel. Damri kobef anavla alter have a chazaka. Let your chazaka batay. I'm like, but in this case, it's mamish bechila. Because he was atavisiyah beguda by badoi. I'm like, yeah, but it's bechila betauti. At gufcha, yavi yadata, lo avi avadat. So ki echida at lo avi yadat, unami lo avi yadat. Rav Kahana shakal bitka ba'ara. And he too was Ozal Hada Guda Biara the Lav Day. So Otto the Kamidir of Yuda. Ozal Aite Tresa Havi. Chanomar Tartu Tziata Al. Vachanomar Talat Tziata Al. Omale, well, you're going to have to pay at least Tarte me go Talat. Omale, wait a minute here. Come on, Grib Shimon and Elazar. The Tanya Grib Shimon and Elazar. Lo Nechu Beit Shamayu Beit Hilil. I'll stay. The truth is, if we put in the second Omale, then this has to be read as a statement. Right? Omar Lay, Krip Shimon Elazar. But right? There are those who take it out, so that the second Omar Lay makes sense as a tiny. He was saying to him, I'm saying it, Krip Shimon Elazar. Yeah.
No, the way
Rebbe
said in Shir is, who do you think you're going to?
Exactly, without the Omar Lay. Right? That would be Rav Kahana saying to him. But then the second Amalei is strange. Okay? So what do you mean? But you should have just closed it by saying, but ain't alocha. It's just your source to what to do with these Amaleis. It's not clear that they belong to you. So come on, Rabbi Shimon Elazar. The Tanya Amar, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, no nechu, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, al shtei kitei din. She'achat omeret mona, ve'achat omeret matayim, she'esh b'chol matayim mona. Alma nechleko akat achat, she'echat omer mona, ve'echat omer matayim, Beit Shammai omer nechlekai dutan, Beit Hillel Omrim Yesh Bechla Matayim Man. So here, if this Omar Lay shouldn't be here, if it was all what he was tying to him, V'hamaitina lecha yigar to mima harava, de'in alach Rav Shimon Elazar. Omar Lay, okay, sure. L'chiteite. Ahu gavra, de darba kashta b'liyata, arba shani. Ata mori de beit ashkir, Omar Lay, what? My beit abai beit Omar Lay, b'plani zavita zavim minach. Ata lekam nerbchi, Omar Lay, even Yom Echad. So ukim lo biyotcha, but ilo lo. Omar Rav, I was right there, and yativ na kamei dechavivi va'armi levechi. And I'm nasu lekach from korba laila. The chaziti ledaite that of course that's okay. In other words, if the guy himself had said it, the yomalei that kamoi di dizav na minach, that would have been fine. Me'aman miko di boy yomalei anazavanta minach. It's no different. Omar Rava, kavati rechiyah mistav from the Mishnah. The ktani habam ishum yirusha no tzarich tana. Is that mashma? The Tana would all boy. Paraya boy? Nah, I mean, Dilma lo raya boy, velo taina boy. Or viboy demi, even if it does need a raya, there's no comparison. That's a yorish. We're talking about a lokeach. Because shiny lokeach, the lo shadi zuzi bichdi. Iboy lo. How about if he was just near a bomai? Amra baya, hihi. Rav amar, no. Avidinish to say, are velo zovin. It doesn't prove a darn thing. Shloshala kuchot mitstarfim. Amar rav vechulam bishtar. The member of the server, Rav Shtar, eat like Kala, but Adim let like Kala. I thought, Omar Rav Amokar Sotaba Adim, go Vemene Kasimishu Badim. A big difference. Atam Lekuchot. And if they don't do due diligence to find out about the Adim, Inu Avsidu Anaf Shayu.